Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon to everyone. On today's PPSC PDP call on Monday, the 31st of January, we have Jeff Newman, James Bladel, Alex Gakuru, Tatiana Kramtsova. From staff, we have Marika Konings, Glenda Saint-Géry, Margie Milam, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. No apologies noted today, and if I can just please remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. And I see that Alan Greenberg and Avri Doria will be joining shortly. Thank you. Over to you, Jeff.
Okay, thank you very much. And I'm noticing again, we still don't have anyone from the commercial stakeholder group on this call. Is that right? There's no IP or business or ISP?
Alex Gakuru is from a commercial stakeholder group.
No, he's not. He's from NCUC.
Oh, sorry, Gabri. Sorry.
No, I'm from Asia.
Okay.
I'm the opposite.
All right. I'm going to, and I know we got something from John apologizing, but I haven't heard from the IP group in a while. I will certainly raise this. We have a council meeting on Thursday.
Outrageous time.
For
some.
Great for people in Europe. Okay.
Not really.
Well. All right, we're going to start with actually some of the action items that I've seen a little bit of a flurry of activity on the email list, probably more activity on the email list than I've seen for months, so which is a good thing. And so we'll start with those couple issues, and then we'll continue working through the outstanding issues and the report. And so the first one is, and I promise to keep this call to an hour, So I hope to stick with that promise. And so the first one was on Recommendation 10, Impact Analysis. And, Marika, if you could just tell me on which page of the issues list that's on. That's
two.
As I'm scrolling through here.
It's on page 17 at the bottom on the version that's on the screen on the right-hand side.
Okay, great. So page 17 at the bottom, impact analysis. There was a comment in there that Avri had put in that wanted to do wanted some new language to make sure that any analysis would include the broader set of rights, including what she had said was human rights analysis. And so what we had asked James to do is to go back and to look at the AOC and to see if anything covered that kind of topic. And James, just before the call, had submitted some language. It was actually after Avri had submitted some of her proposed language. So I'm going to go with James's language first, since we had asked him to do that research. And he said, Section 3 of the Affirmation of Commitments refers to outlines ICANN's commitments to uphold, preserve the public interest, security, stability, and resiliency of the DNS, competition, consumer trust, and consumer choice, and international participation. And so that was kind of what James had said. We should create some language that would refer to all of that. And then Avri had submitted some language that more specifically refers to human rights. So why don't we start there and see where we end up? So who wants to start?
I don't have. I'll raise my hand.
Okay, Avri.
Yeah. To say that human rights is outside ICANN's scope is. Sort of a strange thing to say. Human rights is always within scope. We cannot ever not take human rights into account. And so I find it completely unacceptable that we say it's beyond our scope to look into things like privacy. I mean, privacy is a human right. Privacy is part of every decision that we've got to make in terms of what we're doing. And to say that that's out of scope is just inconceivable to me. So I really strongly insist that we need to include some mention of human rights. Otherwise, we are really quite remiss in looking at saying that we don't care that the impact of our policies has on the human rights of Internet users is just a real deficiency. And you know, so seeing that it's out of scope is just totally bemusing to me. Thanks.
Okay. James?
Yeah, just to respond, I don't think anyone in the ICANN community is anti-human rights. I think we're coming up with a list of what we feel is appropriate to study for the impact of a PDP. I think that items like privacy and other types of rights would definitely fall under the heading of public trust or public interest. In fact, I think public interest could be read even more broadly than human rights, because I think there's actually some things out there that enumerate human rights, and there may be other rights that aren't contained in those that would fall under public interest. So I think perhaps public interest is a broader statement.
Marilyn, and then I'll go back on mute.
Okay, let me get James to finish up, and then I'll go to you, Marilyn. Was that Marilyn?
Yes, thank you. I just go on mute. I do want to make a comment later. Thanks.
Okay. All right, James and then Marilyn.
Yeah, and I think here I kind of lost my train of thought, but ultimately I think that we have to mirror or track the things that are in the AOC that the Department of Commerce and ICANN have set out for themselves in describing their own mission. And I think that, it's not necessarily a good idea within this small element of the GNSO to add to that mission or to build upon that mission. And I'll just leave it at that.
Okay, let me go to Marilyn.
Thank you. My apologies for being late, and I'll announce I'm going to drop off in 20 minutes. But my comment is, I think, very consistent with what James just said. During the President's Strategy Committee, which worked for almost 3 years, we did have a serious discussion about this range of topics related to defining ICANN's role in the public interest, which needed to be tied to their role as a technical coordinator and manager of the unique indicators. So it was an effort to understand where it was appropriate for ICANN to examine the implications of their work. And I do think by sticking with the definitions and terms and terminology that's in the AOC, we capture the concept but don't enter into a debate at this point about what would fall into it. And we are able then to deal with the information that is needed on a PDP by PDP basis. So I would support what James is saying.
Okay, so Avery, do you if we went with just the AOC, do you think that human rights is an element that's missing from there? Do you think it's...
Yes. Yes, I am totally, and really this is honestly said, I am totally flabbergasted that we are so afraid of using the term human rights, and that what we work and the work we do has to at least look at the impact of that on human rights. And the fact that we can't use those two words in our document is just, it's shocking to me, and I really don't know how to deal with it and to say, well, it's included here. I mean, this is just so fundamental to anything we should be doing that I just don't get it.
I'm sorry. May I get back in the queue?
Sure.
So I am going to respond to that.
I think that actually that's perhaps Aubrey not really fully understanding what I meant, and James, I'm not going to put words into your mind, so it's up to you to clarify. But, there are a range of rights, and I'm not prioritizing one right over another. I'm not selecting one right in preference to another. There are times, and in our world today, the visibility of the implications of human rights are very high. And I'm very personally sensitive to that because of the number of friends I have that are living in countries that are affected by that. But I'm just trying to have a phrase that is broadly inclusive and does not restrict the kinds of rights that might need to be addressed. So it certainly doesn't exclude human rights. It should include human rights, but it also must include other applicable rights as well.
Quickly, if never mind.
Okay, well, I can put you back in the queue,
yeah,
Aubrey.
Put me back in the queue.
Okay, so let me go to James, Alex, and then Aubrey.
Hi, Jess. James speaking. Sorry for the slow on the mute button. I just believe that when we start to talk about human rights, I don't know how to say this in such a way. I don't want to be seen as someone who's wanting to, diminish those concerns at all. I mean, they're, I think, an important part of what I do and, you know, my work and my personal life. But I think that when we start talking about, the technical coordination of the DNS, I feel like any discussion of human rights just naturally takes ICANN out of its scope and into topics involving content and use. And, you know, I think that that's probably beyond what, you know, ICANN's role is as a technical coordinator of the DNS. And I think that there are certainly human rights issues on the Internet, okay? But looking at the narrow scope of what ICANN is supposed to do, I think that it's only when ICANN strays outside of its mission does it start to encounter those human rights issues. So that's just, you know, there's got to be a boundary, I think, on what ICANN should and should not be involving itself in. So, thanks.
Okay, thanks, James. Alex?
Alex speaking. I think human rights is so fundamental to everything, and including everything that goes on at ICANN, that to leave it out would be a fundamental flaw in all the things that we are doing. For example, to relate human rights and DNS, there's a fundamental right for people to receive information. But for some reason, for some technical reason or other reason that is ICANN-related, if the right to receive that information is through some policies is constrained, we have fundamentally affected rights through a certain policy that we have denied access to information to many people, wherever they may be in the world. So they are two entwined issues. They may not necessarily be human rights on some blog posted somewhere, but it might be actually a question of how you're manipulating information through the DNS technical ways of manipulating that. So I do believe this is such a strong issue, especially for some of us who are in the non-commercial stakeholder group, that we really strongly feel that is a very important and dear subject to us. Thank you.
John, I need to be back in the queue. May I, please?
Let me go to Aubrey, then Alan, then Marilyn.
Thanks. I endorse much of what Alex said. I think, first of all, human rights are the rights that have been defined by international covenants that most all of the countries that we're from have signed and they are binding on our government. This is the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, and it is binding on us all. So it is so fundamental that the fact that we can't refer to it, they are known rights. You're right. There are other rights. There, as I said in the notion, there are claims to developmental rights, which means that the wealth of the rich companies must be spread to the wealth of poor countries. People have made claims for corporate rights. And so on. Now, many of us argue that insofar as these things are rights, they stem only from human rights, and that there isn't some separate wealth of rights. It's the rights that stem are the ones that can be shown to come from human rights. And these have been defined and these are not a speculative category, as rights is a speculative category. Human rights, especially capital, and even put a reference to the International Covenant that is a binding instrument on us all, except for maybe, you know, a handful of countries, that we're just saying these things will be considered. We will look at the impact on these things, whether it's privacy, whether it's freedom of expression, whether it's a corporation's right, if that corporate right can be shown to stem from human rights of association and doing business, which is also mentioned there. So those things, it is a known quantity. It's not something beyond. And so, and as for ICANN's technical scope, that's sort of one of those things that we say whenever we want to not do something. ICANN's scope has gone so far beyond technical work. Nothing that the GNSO does practically touches technical work. The whole new GTLD program and everything else is purely policy. It's purely business oriented, and not, I mean, it has nothing to do, nothing in the GTLD policy other than perhaps some rules that say you have to follow IANA rules. That it is technical. It's all social policy. And to say that we're just doing technical is a story that died, you know, in the first 3 years of ICANN. Thank you.
Okay, let me go to Alan and then Marilyn, then I'll put myself in the queue.
Okay, thank you. I started off thinking that this wasn't a good idea. I'm starting to move to the concept that it is not a bad idea to put this kind of thing in, and I have no problem for people who are worried that we still must consider ICANN's scope. You know, it can be phrased in the context of, you know, to the extent that these issues, you know, intersect with ICANN's scope. You know, so we're not going into pure human rights that have nothing to do with what ICANN has any say over. But I'm not against putting something like this in. I think reminding people that indeed we do have a responsibility outside of the purely commercial aspects is a good thing. So I think to mention it as a one of the areas that reviews should consider is certainly not bad. Now, many of our policies will have absolutely no intersection with human rights, and that's fine. But to the extent that they do, I think it's reasonable to put it in. And I've moved a lot since we started this discussion. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Alan. Let me go to Marilyn.
So I'm going to make a comment about where, how, and when topics are addressed. Alan has maybe presented phrasing that I might be interested in examining further, but I am also going to note that there's a much larger issue. It's not only and always about PDPs. And so I think we all individually need to ask ourselves if this is a priority concern to us, then we need to be taking into account how any recommendation can then be accepted and actualized at the meta level, meaning approved and accepted by the board. Now, so I'm just trying to understand the role we have in developing a PDP, and I could possibly consider language of the nature that Alan might be proposing, but I think we have to be really, really careful and understand we just can't create something in a PDP, and if it's not supported at the larger level, it's still not going to achieve the change we may be committed to or the implications we may be committed to. So having said that, I'm still thinking we have not talked about the nexus between the role of the PDP and examination of rights sufficiently.
And I'd like to see us begin to use that time-honored technique called square brackets. And then we could have possible proposed approaches that we could then talk about further. And I'm sorry, Jeff, to say this needs more discussion, but it is a very important issue, and I don't think today is actually going to be enough discussion on this particular topic.
Yeah, I'm starting to get that impression as well. And certainly there's no consensus on either way, one way or the other. But can I just ask, Marilyn, what was the language that you had kind of thought Alan had said that you said you'd like to think about a little bit more?
Well, look, when I thought we should be discussing the question of rights broadly, I'm open to thinking that that could then have EG. And I'm open to thinking that I'm not committed because I would have to have more conversation with others, but I'm open to thinking that the first example could be human rights followed by others. But I just think we've got to remember who we are and how limited, even as important as our role is, we can't only say we're going to examine human rights implication. We have to look at the broader language of rights.
Okay. Now I'm going to take off my chair hat and just give kind of a personal thought on human rights. Actually, sorry, not on human rights. I'm not going to comment on human rights, but just to, as a registry and as someone who, when going through a PDP, part of my issue is that a lot of what people think are basic human rights turn out to actually not necessarily be human rights as later interpreted by a court. And to give an example, when the United States Department of Commerce clarified its policy on domain names back in 2003, 2004, when it basically banned the use of proxy domain name registrations, because they said it violated their policy on accurate, complete whois, there was an immediate lawsuit by a domain name registrant on behalf of a class of domain name registrants claiming that to ban proxy registrations was a violation of their human rights, was a violation of free speech, and, you know, went on with a First Amendment case. The registrants lost that case, and it went up to the Court of Appeals, and they lost that court, and they did not decide to pursue that before the Supreme Court. And the court said that there is no fundamental right for any U.S. citizen to obtain a domain name registration. And I know there's a lot of people that, you know, may disagree with that, but the problem I have from a personal level is there will always be people making claims like that, and, you know, how to analyze that. And again, I know it's just U.S. law, but my point is that anytime a registry wants to do something, a registrar wants to do something, or anytime that somebody wants a policy, they're going to make claims on human rights, which are very difficult for anyone within the ICANN community, whether that be ICANN staff, people within the community, even experts. Everyone will disagree on such a hotbed topic like that. It makes me as a registry kind of nervous to include a term like human rights, but again, that's just kind of a personal commentary. I'm not saying that it shouldn't be considered at all. I'm just giving you kind of why something like that just makes me a little bit nervous. So with that, let me go to Avery.
Yeah, thank you. I think, first of all, I could say pretty much what you just said. If we're talking about economic impact, compensation, consumer impact, et cetera, that all of those things are certainly highly argumentative and highly, highly fueled topics. What we're talking about here is an impact analysis. What we're talking about here is something that gives us a picture of some of the landscape that stands before us, that gives us a picture of where the dragons lie in the details of the PDP work that is just going to start. That's all at the moment that I'm asking for, is that we have to look at that whole picture. And certainly when the economic analysis is there, you know that half the population is going to say, that's wrong. When there's the consumer impact, you know that half the population is going to say that's wrong, unless we get to the point of impact analysis reports that sort of give us both sides of an issue and try to give us a complete panorama of what it is we're facing. Obviously, you already made the other point that I wanted to make, is that we have to go just beyond U.S. law. I realize that with a U.S. corporation, and that therefore, ultimately, if somebody takes ICANN to court, it's going to happen under U.S. law. But within setting our policies, insofar as we don't go against U.S. law, we really have to take a broader perspective in what others consider rights and what others consider relevant, so that we don't need to just restrict ourselves to being barely legal within a U.S. context. If the union of rights is greater than the rights that the U.S. says are rock bottom, there's no reason not to go with that. So certainly, just because something would lose in a court case does not mean, as long as we're not breaking U.S. law, does not mean that ICANN can't take a account of those in looking, before starting the PDP, at what the impacts may or may not be, so that the people doing the PDP are as informed as possible of the ramifications of their work.
Okay, thank you, Aubrey. So, Aubrey, if we did that, if we did something like Marilyn and Alan were saying, is if we had rights, and the word rights in there, and then in parentheses, e.g., human rights, economic, whatever other rights there are, intellectual property, whatever they are, would that be something that's kind of a compromise in the middle, or is that...
It might be. I'd need to see what it looked like. As I say, you know, if people mention corporate rights, then I'll ask to mention developmental rights. So certainly for every one side we look at the other side. And that's why I'm saying it's simpler to go with something that's got a basis in international covenant, international treaty, international law. I have no problem with getting more complex, but once we get more complex, I would argue to maintain parallelism. And so whenever we come out in favor of intellectual property rights, then I feel that we need to mention the other side of the coin, privacy. If we mention
I
feel the necessity to mention developmental rights. And just to keep parity in what we say. Thanks.
Okay. Alan.
I'm starting to get very worried here. We're describing impact analysis, and it sounds like we're describing one which may be required, or we're talking about, or any given stakeholder group can demand that it be done before a decision is made. That we're putting in an ability to stop any PDP from happening because of the required to do such an extensive study that it's going to be almost impossible to perform and to do to the satisfaction of everyone. And when I say satisfaction, you know, if they don't like the results, they'll say it hasn't been done adequately. I'm starting to worry we're putting a huge impediment at the beginning of a PDP process, which is going to be almost a guarantee that it can be thwarted, you know, that the PDP process can be thwarted because of the lack of analysis which we're now mandating or saying can be called for. Yeah. It's just starting to worry me very, very, very highly. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. I think that kind of actually puts some things into perspective, too. We're not talking about, if we go back, we weren't talking about this being a mandatory, every element must be examined.
No, but we're saying it's an opportunity, and we're now using words like ICANN must, and I'm not sure who it is that's going to do this. Is this the people who are asking for it? Is this an independent party? Is this going to be a two-year study that ICANN's going to have to go to outside people for? It's starting to sound like something which is could be used as a tool against PDPs instead of helping them do it right.
Right. So if we go back to the recommendation, I think it's a good point. Let's go back to the recommendation.
Jeff, can I just chime in on that?
Yeah, sure, James.
I just wanted to say you're absolutely right, Alan, and I think that that means that if there's anything at all in here, it should be as narrow as possible so it doesn't end up being the universal PDP killer, you know, that all PDPs fail to get off the ground because they fail on one aspect of the impact analysis or the other. I agree completely, and that's why I would advocate keeping it as narrow as possible.
So here's what the recommendation says that we had. It says the PDP work team recommends that the Policy Development Procedure Manual describe the option for the GNSO Council to require that an impact analysis be conducted if appropriate or necessary prior to the vote for the initiation of a PDP. Such an impact analysis could include the assessment of the economic impact, the impact on competition, the impact on consumer choice and or protection, et cetera. So it's still, at this point, it's an option for the council to require an impact analysis. So it's all optional at the GNSO council's discretion. And I guess we would just be, instead of just this list here, we would include impact on human rights as another element. It's not mandatory, but it's something that the GNSO Council could decide to do, and you know, presumably that would be by a majority of both houses, and that would be a well, Margie's got a comment, so maybe I'm stating something incorrect, but Margie?
No, this is Margie, Jeff. I was just pointing out that I guess if this is prior to the initiation of the PDP, are you really asking that staff in doing the issues report would have to outline the impacts to these various rights? I mean, that I just don't know how we would do that. We would probably need a lot more if this is something that gets adopted, guidance on how that would even be done.
Yeah, so I think it's not much different than what sometimes happens with other PDPs right now, where you do go in and say, this is, you point out the issue, you don't solve it, you don't say that, you don't point out to the extent, you say these are parties that could be impacted, and here's some reasons why, and so you oftentimes, I've seen in issues reports say, you know, IP owners may claim this or may believe this, and registries and registrars may have to do these things depending on the outcome. I think it's a light touch on these issues and not any kind of extensive analysis.
Okay, I understand. Thanks.
Okay, Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. I think how it currently reads, to me, it does sound as this, you know, really extensive, heavy kind of impact analysis that maybe a third party or a research institute would do. So if the intention is to make this indeed a lightweight, you know, indeed maybe take into consideration when someone, you know, submits an issue request and they might want to outline as well, you know, who are affected by this, and for staff to, you know, take more into consideration what other parties might be affected by a certain issue, you know, might want to make that a bit more lightweight, because I think it reads more heavyweight here. And another question I have, because we do talk about requiring an impact analysis, I don't know if you're saying, well, this is really optional, if we should change require as well to request, to make it sound indeed that this is really an option for the council to request and not to require at every time there is an initiation of a PDP.
So I think that makes sense to change require to request, and I do think it's lightweight at this juncture, because we don't know what the outcome is going to be at this point. And I think I don't know if Alan raised that or someone else did raise it in the comments, but you know, we don't want to presuppose any outcomes, and we can't. So to the extent that it needs to be done, it would be a very lightweight at this point, and then maybe later on, I'm sure a working group, if they have a strong opinion, or a work team could request a more in-depth type of analysis. Aubrey?
Yeah, I'd just like to point out that we already say to require be conducted if appropriate or necessary prior to the vote. So, I mean, we've already got the if appropriate or necessary. I have no problem with changing a request if appropriate or necessary. I guess a request if appropriate or necessary means the council could decide that it was necessary and the ICANN staff could say, nope, we're not going to do it because it's just a request, not a requirement. So think about that carefully. And, you know, perhaps you do want to give ICANN staff the ability to say no to the council when it asks for something. But other than that, you already do have, you know, the internationally well-known, if appropriate and necessary, which means you can get away with doing nothing in the phrase already. And then in the second sentence, you said, could include. And I haven't been recommending, well, I guess when I rewrote something, I did write it stronger. But if we're just adding human rights to the list, I'm not recommending that we change could to should or must. I'm not making that recommendation. I'm just at the base recommending that we have one extra clause in what could be considered if appropriate or necessary. And just as an aside, whenever you see if appropriate in a UN document, it means forget it, it's not going to happen. I know that's not the case in ICANN, but if appropriate and necessary gives so much leeway to not do something. Thank you.
Okay, well, so what I'm going to ask, Marika, is if you could take the language there. I've heard what Aubrey said, but let's just square bracket the word, put request in for require, and put a square bracket around human rights in such impact analysis could include, and then, you know, add human rights to it, and maybe even, you know, some of the language that James had forwarded around, like, so public interest, human rights, security, stability, resiliency of the DNS. We need to add those elements as well. So if we could do that, that'd be great. Let's move on to the next one. I didn't realize we'd spend so much time on this one, but it's kind of important. At least a number of people feel like that was important to cover. So I don't consider that wasted time at all. Recommendation 18 is the next one James had a comment on, which is reconsidering this issue. So let's go to recommendation 18, which, just to remind everyone, was I'm scrolling as we do this. This is an appeals mechanism, and we had said that perhaps putting in there a suggested approach would be to allow an appeal mechanism for those with standing. And so we basically put in some language says that for ACs that request an issues report, to the extent that the GNSL, I'm paraphrasing, does not initiate a PDP, then there should be some sort of meeting between the AC and the GNSO to see if they can kind of resolve that. It's not a mandatory. You have to do it. You have to do the PDP. It's just kind of a formal mechanism for the two to get together within a certain time frame. And then we had asked James to put together some language on that. And James's comment is, reconsidering the issue, I'm now of the opinion that we should leave the existing text intact. Designing a formal appeals mechanism would have numerous unknown and perhaps unanticipated consequences and can be seen as undermining the role of counsel in policy development. We can discuss further on today's call, but I would oppose any additional language here. So let me go to James. You want to offer any more color on that, and then I'll go to Alan?
Well, just that, you know, just what it says. I thought about this since our last call on Thursday, and I'm concerned that it opens a door that's becomes very complicated if we try to set that down into rules and start to write that up as a prescribed requirement or procedure. And I think the way we have it is, you know, it accounts for possibly more scenarios in a way that is respectful of the roles of the AC and the council. It's like, hey, if you guys can't agree, then you should get together and talk this out. You know, it doesn't say how they should talk it out, when they should talk it out, who they should be talking to. You know, I feel that, you know, keeping it as informal and leaving it up to the discretion of the council and the ACs, I think is the preferred approach. And that's really all I wanted to add to that section. So I think the language we have there right now is pretty good.
Sorry, the language that's in the existing language that's in the black, or the suggests the agreed approach?
I'm sorry, the existing language for recommendation 18, I think, is open-ended and allows for discretion and flexibility.
James, which language, the black or the red?
The black language, recommendation 18, in the black on the far left column.
Which basically says that recommends no special formal appeals mechanism be developed. However, a PDP work team recommends that the GNSO Council be required to state its reasons for declining a PDP after receipt of an issues report. So that's what it says right now. And,
yeah, maybe we can add just a little wiggle to that or something and say, you know, and in consultation with the AC that raised the issue or something like that. I just didn't want to go overboard and giving them a kind of a paint-by-numbers of how to resolve this issue, because I don't think that we can anticipate enough scenarios to do that properly.
Okay. So you would be okay with adding something to the effect of in consultation with the AC that raises the issue. Okay. Let me go to then Alan and then Aubrey.
Okay. I'm going to reiterate the point I made in regard to that black wording, but it also applies to the suggestion that there be discussions between the AC and the GNSO. The current black wording says the GNSO Council is required to state its reasons. The GNSO Council only has one reason for rejecting something: the votes didn't add up. Individual voters or stakeholders group might have a reason that they could publish for why they voted in a particular way. And they could be required to state that in such cases. But the GNSO Council itself is not an entity with a thought process. It acts based on the sum total of its constituents. And I find the same problem with the proposal that the GNSO meet with the AC. As we've seen in recent discussions, the GNSO itself it will not and has not been willing to delegate the GNSO decisions to its chair or to other people to act on its behalf, unless there's been a very explicit motion in council. So how can the GNSO, a 21-person group, meet with an AC to discuss things? You're simply going to have a lot of different solitudes stating their position over again, and...
So, Alan,
it's not a mechanism that I think can work.
Can I then? So, would you be okay if it said that a PDP work team recommends that GNSO Council members be required to state their reasons?
I don't think that's going to be particularly useful in this process, but yes, that's better. That at least has some meaning.
Okay. I mean, so at least it'll give you. Something.
It's either the members or stakeholder group, depending on at what level the decision is made within each stakeholder group, and that varies. But
okay,
this is James. I'm sorry, you got a cue. Can you put me at the end of it, please?
Yes. So let me go. I just wanted to kind of offer that as a possible suggestion, and then people can comment on that. Aubrey.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm not sure I understood Alan correctly, but basically, Alan, you're saying that you don't believe that there's any reason for discussion between the GNSO and the PDP requesting AC to discuss and perhaps reevaluate. If that's what you're saying, I have a problem with.
No, I said I don't see a mechanism to do that.
I think that the GNSO has a mechanism for appointing people to do stuff. They get the names of volunteers and they do it. I don't think we need to specify for them how they do it. And the other body has whatever mechanism it does. But to suggest that there be a sit-down between a group appointed by the GNSO Council and a group appointed by the appropriate AC to discuss their differences and try to find a mutually acceptable solution seems to be something that we don't need to specify how they do it. The GNSO has a way now for finding volunteers for a committee, and anybody that cares participates, and every other body has a way to determine how it's going to do things. And just, you know, I don't think we need to get into specifics about how it's done. I do think that it's imperative that we have a way for the GNSO Council to allow the person, the group, and it's a group withstanding, it can only be another AC, the group withstanding to say, let's talk about this and let's reconsider.
I certainly do not object to that, not one iota. I just feel that we need to put in a mechanism which has some semblance of reality. The GNSO right now can appoint a group to do work, but not to act on its behalf.
Well, yeah, they would bring a recommendation back to the council,
which could be voted down again, just like
exactly.
Everything else.
Exactly, but at least it would have been talked through.
Okay, let me go to James, and then if Alan, you want back in the queue,
okay.
Let me know. James.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that Alan raised a very good point that I hadn't considered. You know, how do you, the GNSO Council is a body that may or may not, be monolithic in its positions, and I think that, you know, it's a good point to say, how do you get, you know, one body to work with another body, in such a way that they can raise the issues. I just feel that we should avoid being prescriptive here, and we should leave it open to flexibility. Different informal processes may work in one situation where another situation may call for a more formal process, and we just need to leave that open. But Alan raised some really good points that I hadn't considered. Thanks.
So, James, what do you think about the change in language? We'll start with that. The change in language, instead of saying recommends that GNSO Council be required to state its reasons, we would say GNSO Council members, stakeholder groups, constituencies. We have to figure out a good wording, but essentially take it out of the body, but make sure that its members be required to state their reasons.
Well, if you're asking me directly, I think that, Alan had a really good point. It's the GNSO Council. The reason is we didn't have enough people vote in the affirmative on this, so that's the reason why we didn't do this. Now, as far as the reasoning behind their votes, I think that that is something you would have to go to the individual council members for. And they, I wonder how much discretion they would have in saying that this is, you know, the way my constituency or stakeholder group feels, and that's why I'm representing what their, what their interests are. And it should be enough. You know, why is that not a legitimate reason for denying a PDP?
I'll point out that saying it's a stakeholder group must state its reasons can end up with the same level. That, you know, if a stakeholder group has the council members bound by a vote of the stakeholder group, then the stakeholder group doesn't have a reason other than that's the way the votes came out.
Okay, so I think that, you know, I think we are supposed to be an open and transparent community, and we're supposed to operate with transparency. And so just a little bit of a counter to what James said, I think, and I know this is my case personally as a counselor, and what I always take back to my stakeholder group is that anytime we vote something down, we need to actually have a good, or in favor for that matter, we need to have good rationale to explain why, other than it's just why we want to do it. And I think for the most part, stakeholder groups and constituencies have explained themselves fairly well. People may not like the rationale, but I don't think it's too much of an imposition to ask groups why they vote for something or against something, for that matter. I think that's, you know, that kind of helps debate, healthy debate, and it kind of helps with transparency and accountability. So I'm not sure if I misinterpreted something you said, James, but just from my personal opinion, just saying, well, my stakeholder group told me to vote that way, probably not, you know, ideal.
No. Okay, and maybe I'm not being very clear, and I apologize, it's kind of early in the morning, but, you know, we rarely see I think the way issues go through the ICANN process is that issues are not voted down. Issues have to gain a consensus, a threshold of consensus support. And some issues will achieve that threshold, and some issues won't achieve that threshold. So you're essentially saying not necessarily why someone voted against something. It's just like, why don't you feel you can support this? Maybe it's because they don't feel it goes far enough, for example. You know, I think it's possibly a little confusing when we start to think of issues as being voted down as opposed to issues that just failed to achieve enough support. But yes, I mean, you know, sometimes it may say that, you know, explaining on the behalf of a stakeholder group or constituency that, you know, we just can't support this. Reason being, well, you know, the reasons may vary. And it might be very difficult for an individual counselor to encapsulate all of the possible reasons that something had failed to achieve support into, something that would satisfy the origin of the issues report. So I'm just, you know, I guess I'm in favor of just keeping this open and flexible and keeping people talking in a manner that works best for that situation rather than trying to build a one-size-fits-all process.
Yeah, I can live with that.
I can't.
Okay, Aubrey?
Yeah, first of all, I mean, we're starting out by saying recommends that no formal appeals mechanism. And so we're starting out our sentence by saying, sorry, GNSO makes a decision, or rather GNSO Council makes a decision. That's it. Final, no discussion, no brooking our decisions. We are the final arbiter. And so I think starting out something with that sentence does not leave it open and flexible. Now, if we said something like, you know, it needs to discuss, it needs to set up a group to discuss, it needs to do whatever, then that. I'm not saying there needs to be a formal, but there does need to be some way of going forward. The GNSO Council cannot set itself up as totalitarian in these issues. It must offer some leeway for the ACs to come back and saying, and to go with James's reasoning. Perhaps it wasn't voted down. Perhaps it never got to the level of being supported because you didn't understand our point. So please, you said it didn't rise to the need. Well, let us, you know, explain to you why it rose to the need. And it's just basically to give a chance for some sort of closure between the groups so that you don't have a situation where someone makes a request for an issue, the GNSO says no, and that's the end of it. That is not a good model for ACs and SOs to work together, and I'm not saying we should prescribe it tightly. I'm basically just saying there needs to be some form of discussion. It doesn't need to be the council members. It can be the thought leader from the constituency or stakeholder group. It can be anyone the council decides to appoint. It can be four people, one from each stakeholder group, or it could be seven, one from each, you know, constituency. That doesn't matter. It's the people that are interested, just like the GNSO always does things on that basis. So I just think that closing the door and saying, we don't need to talk to you about this and we don't need to explain ourselves because we decided and that's the end of it, is just a bad model for us. Thank you.
Okay. Let me go to Alan.
Yeah, when I said I can live with that, to what James said, I can live with what he said, which I didn't think mapped to the writing in black right now, and maybe I misunderstood what he said. The writing in black says there is no recourse. Someone has to state a reason, and we're talking about who it is that has to state that reason, which is not what I heard James say of keep it open and flexible and not necessarily say one size fits all. You know, so I'm agreeing with what Avery just said. I don't think we want to have a close the door. I'm not quite sure what Avery said about, or James said about a loophole of, for tyranny of the majority. We live by tyranny of the majority right now. That's exactly how we make all of our decisions. So I'm not quite sure of the implications of that. But I was agreeing that we need some words which do allow a way forward, not just tough, we made a decision, go away, which is essentially what the writing in black says. Okay, James, okay. I can accept tyranny of the minority better than the majority.
Sorry, that was a mistake on my part. I need more caffeine on this end. And then the other bit of that would be, you know, we have to be very, very careful here, folks, because it sounds like we're saying we don't trust the council and we don't want them to do their job. They have a role to play, and it's an important one in determining what issues go forward as PDPs and what issues do not. And if we're opening the door to, you know, we agree with the GNSO council only when it says yes, and we disagree with them whenever they say no, I think that we need to really take a look at what that means existentially for this body. Thanks.
Okay, guys, I'm trying to find a middle ground here to see what we could say, and it seems like we have just two opposite sides here. So we had suggested wording here that basically says that the members should be required to state their reasons. And then I'm not sure. I gotta re-listen to this discussion again to think about what else we could do, if anything, to address kind of what everyone's saying. I think we've spent a lot of time on this. Alan, is your hand still raised from before?
No, it isn't. Sorry.
Well, okay. I'll call on you with the hope. Oh, it isn't raised. Okay.
Well, I'll talk more if you want to. It wasn't intentionally up.
No, thank you. Not unless you can offer a middle ground solution that everyone will accept.
I'm a representative of the only group that's ever done this, and both times we won. Both times the PDP was initiated, and I'm trying to think of, you know, in particular the last one on expiration issues. What would have happened if it had been turned down, and what would have been a reasonable recourse? And to be candid, I'm not sure discussions would have made any change in that one. You know, maybe you go into private discussions and you know, with someone and try to convert votes. I'm not sure that's going to be done by changing their minds publicly, you know, in a formal discussion. So maybe there needs to be a way that the advisory committee can, you know, perhaps hold discussions and or submit a new document and that requires the GNSO to reconsider. You know, it's not a formal appeal to someone else, but it's an opportunity to go turn the crank once more and see if the outcome is different. And I don't quite know what the mechanism for that would be, but that may well have merit.
Right. Well, and the other thing you need to consider, too, is that there's such a low threshold for initiating a PDP that if an AC is not able to get that low threshold, then it's probably discussions are probably not going to get you very far again with the council. I think, you know, it's not as if we're saying you have to get a majority of both houses. You really only have to get such a small percentage to get that PDP, and I'm not sure how many circumstances we're talking about where a PDP fails to get initiated when an AC has requested that issues report.
That's a rationale for us not agonizing over it too much and put it in because it's not likely to be used all that much. I agree with Avery that putting in some recourse, if it's turned down, to the AC that has put probably a significant effort into this so far, and I think has merit. I'm not quite sure of the wording, and I'm not sure I want to volunteer to come up with one. But, you know, I could certainly try between now and the next meeting. I think there is merit. I'm not sure I like the idea of going to a body that could reverse the GNSO's decision. At best, the body, which may be the AC itself, can request or require a revote on the assumption that something will have changed between this vote and the last vote. So I don't think we want to overrule the GNSO, you know, other than going to the board and the board saying yes, do it, and that the board always has that right.
That's another point I was going to make. Yeah, and I don't think anyone here is suggesting that there should be an override mechanism. I could be wrong about that, but I.
All right, against my better judgment, let me try to put together some words.
Okay, thank you, Alan. All right, we have a call, just a reminder, we have a call on Thursday, same time as normal. Hopefully we'll get to some new issues this time. We have some bracketed language in here. Alan will hopefully circulate some language on this subject, and then we can continue from here. Any last questions? Issues? All right, we're going to try to move much more quickly on Thursday. The goal, again, is to get this report out, certainly before the document deadline, but I was hoping well in advance of that. But let's keep working. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
Okay, bye.
Sure.